Now we're holding on Kofiot Ches Amud Beis, the first line of the medium sized lines. So 13 lines from the bottom. We learned in the Mishnah about the various places where the Mishkan was until the Beis Mikdash was built. So let's talk about the chronology. How long was it in each place? You may oil merge from a midbar, boing shana chaser achas. The amount of time that they had the oil moed Mishkan in the desert was 40 years minus one, 39 years. Meaning, in other words, they built the Mishkan in the second year. Well, I guess I was going to teach it out soon, but they built the Mishkan in the year after Yitzias Mitzrayim. They had it with them. They were altogether 40 years in the desert from when they left Mitzrayim until they crossed the Yarden in Eretz Yisrael. Since they built the Mishkan in the second year, means there were 39 years of that. You may oil moed Shabbat Gilgal. Next, the amount of time that the oil moed was in Gilgal, which we've been learning the last few blocks, was one of the two periods during which private bombers were mutter, while they were busy conquering and dividing Eretz Yisrael. Arba Esrei, that consisted of 14 years, of which Zayin Shekov, Shabbat Zayin Shekhoku, 7 years that they were conquering Eretz Yisrael. They didn't quite conquer all of it, but they conquered most of it over a period of 7 years, and then another 7 years that they took dividing it up. The dividing it up was, so they had, and there's a lot of detail that goes into it. The Psukim give a little bit of the detail of it. We know there was a girdle. We know the Psukim and Yeshua mentioned that Yeshua sent out commissioners to survey the land and figure out the details of it. Yeah, in particular to figure out, the girdle was going to tell them in a general way which shevet was going to get in which portion, but you had to figure out the respective value of the land in the different places to make sure that everybody gets their fair share. So that took time. Meanwhile, also the idea is that Amnon points out they also divided up the areas that hadn't been conquered yet, because that way, eventually, after Yeshua passes away and the Shevatim go and each individually continue conquering their own area from the Kanaanim, you don't want that to be considered kibush yochid, an individual conquest, which will mean that it's not fully part of Eretz Yisrael. You want it to be considered kibush rabim, that it was conquered by the Jewish people collectively, and so for that they had to have, but they also had to divide up those areas, at least approximately. So all that took time. Next, you may or merge, but we're going to skip over for the moment Shiloh, because we're going to calculate based on once we know the figures for the other places, then we'll have how much time is left for Shiloh. So skipping over Shiloh for a moment, after Gilgal, the Mishkan, was set up in Shiloh. But then, after Shiloh was destroyed, you may oil merge from Noiv and Givon. The amount of time that the Mishkan was in the cities of Noiv and then Givon, those are counted as one. Those throughout the Perek has been counted as one because they were contiguous. They were one after the other, and they both had the same dinim. During both of them, the Oren was not located in the Mishkan, and they both had the din that you're allowed to bring private korbanos, or that you're allowed to bring korbanos on private bombas, subject to all the discussion that was before about what kind of korbanos can and can't be brought on such bombas. Anyway, that amount of time is Chamishim v'sheva, is 57 years, as the Gemara is going to show the calculation soon. Nishtairu l'shilei gimel meis v'shivim choser achas. So then, how it comes out then, that you have 369 years left for Shiloh. The way we get that figure is, the Pasuk tells us when Shlomo began to build the first Beis Hamikdash, it was 480 years since Yetzias Mitzrayim. To put it in terms of actual calendar years, Yetzias Mitzrayim was in the year 2448, and the first Beis Hamikdash began to be built in the year 2928, which is 480 years later. So now, if we take out of that 480 years, if we subtract the 40 years in the desert, the 14 of Gilgal, and the 57 of Noiv and Givon, then we're going to have left 369. So that's how long the Mishkan stood in the city of Shiloh. So now the Gemara is going to go through and explain the details of the calculation, how we know each of those periods. You may oil merge of a midbar boim chaser achas menolon. How do we know the Mishkan stood in the midbar for 39 years? So the Omamah, we learn in a brisa, shonu rishona osa Moshe eska Mishkan. During the first year after Yetzias Mitzrayim is when Moshe made the Mishkan. He got the instructions from Hashem. He comes down the day after Yom Kippur, tells the Jewish people, they start contributing the materials, and they start constructing the actual pieces of the Mishkan. Famously, the Medrash tells us they finished it on Chofei Kislev, and they should have had the Chanukas HaMishkan then, but Hashem pushed it off to Nisan, because that's the month when the Ovis were born in, and then Hashem later on made it up to Kislev by having Chofei Kislev be the date of Hanukkah. In any case, all that took place during the first year of existence of Mitzrayim, runs naturally enough from Nisan of the year of actually existence of Mitzrayim, Nisan of 2448, through Adar of 2449. During that period, up until and including Adar of 2449, is when the Mishkan's pieces were constructed. Shnia, in the second year, Hukam HaMishkan, the Mishkan was actually set up, it was set up for the first time permanently on Aleph Nisan, which was the beginning of the second year from Yetzias Mitzrayim, because the years of Yetzias Mitzrayim count from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, as the Gemara tells us in Rosh Hashanah. So on that Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the first day of the second year, is when they first set up a Mishkan. During the 7 days before that, every day Moshe was setting up a Mishkan and doing the Avodah and then taking it apart. On that day, he set it up and it remained up as long as the Jewish people remained there at Har Sinai, which was another month and 20 days. And in that second year, also the Shalach Moshe Meraglim, that second year is also when Moshe sent out the Meraglim. Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the Mishkan was set up. The 20th of Iyar, they traveled and left Har Sinai. Various things happened on the way, Kibra Satava and Miriam Saras and so forth. The Meraglim was sent out on the 29th of Sivan. They came back on Tisha B'Av and everything developed from there. So we see that the Mishkan stood for 39 years. So we see the Mishkan stood for 39 years. We don't need any more detail than that. Next, Shabbat Gilgal Abba Esr Shana. We said the Mishkan was in Gilgal for 14 years, which consists of Sheva Shekovshu v'Sheva Shecholku, 7 years that they took conquering most of Eretz Yisrael, and 7 years that they divided it up. So how do we know? Menolon, where do we know those figures? So let's start with the 7 years of conquest. Like this, Tekoma Kolev. Kolev says to Yeshua, now, so they'd finally gotten to a point where again they had conquered most of Eretz Yisrael, defeated them, destroyed the Canaanim, and now it's time to start the division. At that point, Shevet Yehuda, headed by Kolev, who was actually in Parshas Maaseh, he had new Nesiim that were appointed for the Shevatim as they're getting ready to go into Eretz Yisrael because the old Nesiim had passed away. So the Nasi of Yehuda at that point is Kolev. So Kolev comes together with members of his Shevet to ask Yeshua as follows. He tells him many years earlier when you and I were among the Meraglim, we were the only two good ones, and Hashem promised us through Moshe that we're going to be the only ones of them that survive to go into Eretz Yisrael. And in particular, Hashem promised me that the land where I set foot is going to belong to me. Namely, that is Hebron. We find in the pasuk that says in Shlach that they went up through the Negev and he came to Hebron, and the Gemara explains in Sota, Rashi brings it on the pasuk, that Kolev specifically went to Hebron to daven by the Ma'arsam Chela to beg the others to be good to betters for him, that he shouldn't succumb to the advice of the other Meraglim and go bad with them. So now, many years later, Kolev is telling Yeshua, it's time for that promise to be kept. Please portion me the city of Hebron. Incidentally, later on, Hebron actually became one of the Ore Nikla. So what actually happened was that Hebron changed hands multiple times. It belonged to the Canaanim, then to the Jews collectively, then to Shevet Yehuda, then to Kalev, then to the Levim. There's a medrash that actually says it's another reason it's called Kiryas Arba, the city of four, because it went through like four different chambers of ownership. Anyway, the point is, so Kolev says, so Kolev is describing to Yeshua the background of his request. He says, Ben Aboim Shana Onoichi, I was 40 years old, B'shloyach Moshe Eved Hashem Oisi, B'Kodesh Barnea, when Moshe, the servant of Hashem, sent me from Kodesh Barnea, L'Ragel Asa'oreth, to spy out the land. So I was 40 years old then, V'Oshev Oisi Dovak Hashem Lozovi, and I brought back a report as was in my heart, meaning, in other words, outwardly he went along with the Meraglim. He secretly in his heart he planned to bring back a good report unlike the rest of them, and sure enough eventually he did. He and Yeshua were the only ones who are trying to encourage the people, yes, we can conquer Eretz Yisrael. So I was 40 years old then, says Colin. Then he continues. He says, now we've gone through all these years in the desert and conquering Eretz Yisrael, and I'm still alive to see this promise. Now I'm 85 years old. So, you know, it's 45 years since the Meraglim was set. So, ki avdil yaudin bar kamachavi, so now when Kolev crossed the Yaudin, how old would he have been? Bar shivin v'tamni, he would have been 78 years old. Meaning, because when we said before it was 40 years since it was 40 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim until So they crossed over to Eretz Yisrael, but the Meraglim again were sent later in the year. They were sent in Sivan and came back in Av. So sometime between Nisan and Sivan had been Kalev's birthday, and he had turned 40 years old. So in other words, at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, he was a few months shy of 39, and now when the Mishkan was built, he was a few months shy of 40, and then a month or two later he turned 40. Now, the rest of the time, from then until they crossed over into Eretz Yisrael, is another 38 years, and so then, and then 7 years conquest, which makes him now 85. So he's saying now he's 85. There you go then. There's 7 years that they took conquering from when Kalev was 78 until he was 85. Okay. The Sheva Shechokum and Nolan. Now, how do we know that they took 7 years dividing up Eretz Yisrael? So two possibilities. One way that we can say is, since we know that it took, based on the Psukim, as we just analyzed, that it took 7 years to conquer Eretz Yisrael, we can assume that it also took the same amount of time to divide up Eretz Yisrael. Now, where does that assumption come from? It's maybe taka, a little hard to understand, but nevertheless, that's what Gemara is assuming. We can say, in fact, that the fact is, I mean, it did involve I mean, like this, when they conquered Eretz Yisrael, there were Nissim involved. It's not like they had put in so much effort into it, but then the amount of effort they did actually, with nothing else, going from place to place, the same way these commissioners and surveyors also had to take a significant amount of time going from place to place. So that's one way of understanding it. There was an explanation from Diane Fisher one of the Dayanim of the Eda Haredes in Yerushalayim. He explains that basically, since it needed, sometimes you find that 7 years is necessary to establish a new status of something. So the same way over here, it would be they needed 7 years officially dividing it up for it to be considered that now has a status of being divided up. And therefore like we said before, the rest of it won't be kibbutz later. So that's one way we can understand. Another way you can say, otherwise, the pasuk in Yechezkel that says that he saw the Nevuah of the third base of Mikdash in the 14th year after the city had fallen, after Yerushalayim had been destroyed, it wouldn't work out. Namely, as follows. Yechezkel begins his Nevuah, this is in Perek Mem of his Sefer, where he begins describing the third Beis HaMikdash and the future city of Yerushalayim and the future Beis HaMikdash and the redivision of Eretz Yisrael and so on and so forth. He dates his Nevuah, he says, V'Rosh Hashanah Ba'osu L'Chodesh. It was on Rosh Hashanah on the 10th of the month. Now, Rosh Hashanah is not on the 10th of the month, but on the 1st. So the Gemara explains elsewhere that where we'll learn in an Erechin, Rez Hashem, that it means that year was a Yovel year. In a Yovel year, Rosh Hashanah is, in a certain sense, on Yom Kippur, in the sense that that's the day when the slaves are sent home, the Avodim Knanim, Avodim Ivrim, and Omer Sevriyas are sent home, and fields return to their owners. That takes place after they blow shofar on Yom Kippur. So in that year, Yom Kippur is the Rosh Hashanah of that year. So that means it was a Yovel year. He dates it 14 years after Yerushalayim was conquered and destroyed. We know that it was 850 years from when they built, when they started to build the first Beis HaMikdash it was 850 years from when they entered Eretz Yisrael until the first Beis HaMikdash was destroyed, because we said before, 40 years in the desert, then they had, it was 480 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim until they started building the first Beis HaMikdash. Subtract from that 40 years in the desert, you have 440. So 440 years from when they started building the first Beis HaMikdash in the year 2928 until it was from when they entered Eretz Yisrael in 2488 till they started building the first Beis HaMikdash, 2928 comes out 440 years. The first Beis HaMikdash stood for 410, so 440 plus 410 is 850. 850 divides evenly by 50. So it would be an even number of Yovels. So then if we figure that they started counting Shmittas and Yovels as soon as they entered Eretz Yisrael, then the Churban would have been in the year of Yovel itself. 14 years later would not be a year of Yovel. And how can Yechezkel say what he's saying? Therefore, we have to understand that the counting of Shmittas and Yovels was delayed by 14 years. And why would that be? Because they didn't start counting them until everybody is settled, until everybody, or most everybody, is settled in their plots of land, namely after they conquered and after they fully divided Eretz Yisrael. So there we go. That's why that forces us to say that process took 14 years, and only after that did they start the Shemitah and Yovel cycle. Therefore, it comes out that from then until the first base Mikdash is destroyed is 836 years, which comes out to 16 full Yovel cycles, plus another 36 years, another 14 years after the fourth, and brings us to another Yovel year, or what would have been a Yovel year had there been a base Mikdash. The Gemara makes that whole calculation in Erchin. Rashi brings it in some detail over here. When we get to Masechta Erechin, we'll talk about it more, Be'ezras Hashem. Okay, so that's how we know that it took them 7 years to conquer Eretz Yisrael based on the Pasuk, and then 7 years to divide, either based on Sevara, or because that's the only way to make the calculation in Yechezkel work. Okay. Next. Again, we're skipping over Shiloh for the moment, because the amount of time the Mishkan was in Shiloh is calculated only by elimination once we know the amounts of time for all the other places where the Mishkan was. So Oyel Moed Shebenov Given Chamishim Veshava. The amount of time the Mishkan was in Noiv and then in Given was 57 years. And again, we're counting Noiv and Given together for this purpose because they both had the same dinim and they were immediately one after the other. So Menolon, how do we know that? So like the Pasuk describes how in the times of Eli HaKohen, they went to war against the Plishtim, they brought the Aron with them, the Aron was captured, and the Pasuk describes how a messenger, the Medrash says it was none other than Shaul, comes back and tells Eli what happened, he tells him the Jewish people have suffered a great defeat, etc., etc., and the last thing he tells him is that the Aron has been captured. Like the Pasuk says, Vayikaz Kiras Aron HaElokim, as soon as the messenger mentioned that the Aron of Hashem had been captured, then the pasuk continues that Eli fell off his chair and broke his neck and died. He was so overcome by that news. By the way, you know, the messenger had previously told him even that his own sons, Hophni and Pinchas, had been killed. Even that he held himself together. But when he heard the Aron was captured, then he fell, then he lost it and fell over and passed away. The Tana, now we learn in Braisa, Shemes Eli HaKohen, when Eli HaKohen passed away, Chorva Shiloh, then Shiloh was destroyed. The Mishkan in Shiloh was destroyed by the Plishtim. Now, as I mentioned when we learned it in the Mishnah, the Pasuk in Shmuel never actually says in so many words that Shiloh was destroyed. The next thing we know is that the Mishkan is in Noiv. We find a few chapters later. But the Gemara had earlier brought a Pasuk from Tillim, like Yitosh Mishkan Shiloh, that Hashem abandoned the Mishkan of Shiloh. So we see that they no longer use the Mishkan after that. And we find in Yumiya that he explicitly tells the people of his times, if you think the Beis Mikdash is invulnerable to the Goyim, despite your Avedus, then realize what happened to Shiloh. So we see that Shiloh was destroyed. So that happened when Eli passed away, Chorva Shiloh, then Shiloh was destroyed by the Plishtim, Ulbo of the Noiv, and then they came to Noiv and set up the Mishkan over there. Shemesh Shmuel HaRamasi, when Shmuel HaRamasi, Shmuel HaNavi passed away, Chorva Noiv was destroyed when Shaul was paranoid and ordered the Kohanim of Noiv to be killed, because he was told to him by Doeg. Doeg had falsely accused them of being in cahoots with David. So then Noiv was destroyed of all the Givon, and then they came to Givon and set up the Mishkan over there. So altogether, the amount of time that the Mishkan was in Noiv and Givon takes up from when Eli passed away until they started building the first Beis Hamikdash. Can we break that down further? So like this, the Pasuk says, now the Pasuk describes after the Plishtim had captured the Aron, they kept it by them for a few months, but they're suffering terrible plagues and diseases, and they finally realize this isn't working out, we obviously offended the Jewish God, we have to return his Aron. So they returned it to the first place it came back to was the city of Beis Shemesh, but the Jews over there didn't know how to treat the Aron respectfully, so they sent it to the city of Kiryas Yearim. It stayed in the house of a man named Abinadab over there. And the Pasuk says, from when the Orin came to settle in Kiryas Yearim, by Yubu Hayomim, the time increased, the time accumulated, by Yu Esrim Shana, it was eventually 20 years, by Yinohu, for Beis Yisrael, after Hashem, and during all that time, the Jewish people were drawn after Hashem. During that time, Shmuel was working on returning the Jewish people to full allegiance to Hashem, where before that time some of them had been worshipping Avodah Zarah and doing other Averis. Now, how do we break down these 20 years? Now, I think the Abadonel wants to say that it actually means that there were 20 years and all that time Shmuel was alive. But the Gemara is assuming that not. The Gemara is saying that those 20 years actually stretch past Shmuel's lifetime and into David's kingship. 20 years, in other words, does not mean 20 years from then until the next until the next events in the pasuk, which are Shmuel gathering the people together and then getting them to do full tshuva and then defeating the Plishtim. Rather, the Gemara is understanding that 20 years is the total amount of time that the Arden stayed in Kiryas Arden until David took it from there to bring it to Yerushalayim, as we have later on in Shmuel Beis. So, Hani Esrim Shana, how do we break down these 20 years? Is as follows. Esther Shana Shemalach Shmuel Ba'atzmai, 10 years that Shmuel ruled over the Jewish people himself, where he wasn't a king, but in other words, that he was the Shoset, going around and traveling around Eretz Yisrael and teaching the people Torah and getting them to do tshuva. The Shana Shemalach Shmuel B'Shol, then there was a year after Shol was anointed as king, the first year he and Shmuel led the Jewish people jointly. In the sense, Shol is the king and Shmuel is the Navi, and Shol is following what Shmuel tells him to do. Then they had their falling out over the whole matter of Amalek, and from then on the pasuk says that Shmuel never saw Shaul again. So Shnayim Shemalach Shaul. Then there were 2 years that Shaul ruled by himself without Shmuel's guidance. Rashi brings the pasuk says that Shaul ruled for 2 years. So what that means is that it means 2 years by himself without Shmuel's guidance. Before that, there had been, Rashi explains that elsewhere, the Gemara says that Shaul actually had, two and a half years of continued kingship in the source of Shmuel, meaning, in other words, Rashi explains that altogether Shaul was king for 3 years. Of those, there was a half a year when everything was going good. That's what the Gemara is calling over here 1 year, because it was most of that year, when he and Shmuel were ruling the people jointly, that Shmuel was acting as king, but then Shmuel was guiding him. Then after that happened the whole story with Hamalek, and then after that, they parted ways, but nevertheless, Shmuel continued to daven for Shmuel, and then supposed to that, Shmuel had two and a half more years of kingship. So that's the Gemara summarizing that over here as 1 year together with Shaul, with Shmuel, and 2 years by himself. So that's at Vesheva to David. Then you have 7 years when David was ruling out of the city of Hebron. As soon as Shaul passed away, the Pesukim described, David right away asks the Urim V'Tumim what he should do, and Hashem tells him, go to Hebron, and he established his capital there. At that point, only Shevet Yehuda accepted him as king, and his capital was in Hebron, and he ruled there for 7 years, 7.5 years, actually, the Pesuk says elsewhere. And then at the end of that time, all the other Shevatim finally accepted him as king, and he moved to Yerushalayim and set up his capital there, and shortly after that, the Pesukim describe how he had the Urim brought to Yerushalayim. The total amount of time that David ruled over the Jewish people was 40 years. The Hebron Malach Zayin Shana, remember, he ruled in Hebron for 7 years, and in Yerushalayim for 33 years. The Zohar, by the way, makes a point. It wasn't just geopolitics that had him in Hebron for 7 years. It was also because Hebron is where the Ovis are buried. There needed to be that 7 year period when he's connecting with the Ovis. David is, after all, we talk about in Kabbalah that you have the four wheels, so to speak, the four legs or the four wheels of the Merkava. Three of them are the Ovis, and David is the fourth. So therefore, he had to be in Hebron. He had to be living in Hebron for 7 years. So what we do is as follows. So now, we have 20 years that the Arden was in Kiryas Yearim. Then we have the 33 years that David ruled in Yerushalayim. Because shortly after, one of the first things he did after he established his kingship in Yerushalayim and then defeated the Yevusim over there is he tried to bring up the Arden. You have the whole story. It's in Haftarah, Parashat Shemini, where Uzzah touched the Arden and then passed away. And they had to bring it to the house of Ovid Edom for 3 months, and Ovid Edom and his family got tremendous brachas, and then David brought it to Yerushalayim. So all of that took place in the first year when David was ruling in Yerushalayim. So far, and then from there, for another 33 years until David passed away, it's still the Arden was there in Yerushalayim, while meanwhile the Mishkan was in Gibeon. To put it in terms of calendar years, Mishkan Shiloh was destroyed in the year 2871. 10 years from there, that Shmuel was leading the Jewish people by himself brings us to 2881. A year of him and Shaul jointly brings us to 2882. 2 years of Shaul by himself, 2884. Then Shaul was killed in battle. David becomes king first over only over Shevet Yehuda from 2884 to 2891. He's is in Hebron, and there's your 20 years, 2871 from when it was brought to Kiryas Yearim, and 2891 when it was brought to Yerushalayim. And then from there, David passed away in 2924, which is 33 years later. Over Shlomo Ksiv, then you have another 4 years, because by Shlomo it says, Vayachol Livnos, but Livnos is how the Gemara says it, but the actual passage says Livnos, he began building the Beis HaMikdash, Bishnas Arba, and also in the 4th year of his reign. So that's another 4 years we have to add, so there's our 57 years of Noven given together. So if we break it down more finely, then we'll find, based on what we just said, that the Mishkan was in Noiv for approximately 11 years, and then it was in Givon for 46 years. There are different mechoshim that break it down slightly differently based on other analyses of the psukim and other relevant gemaras and other midrashim. It may come out 13 years in Noiv and 44 in Gibbon, whatever. It adds up to 57 years either way. An interesting point in that regard is that seems to imply that as soon as they began building the first Beis HaMikdash, then they stopped using the Mishkan in Gibbon, but that seems a little odd in itself, so it took 7 years to build the first Beis HaMikdash, and meanwhile the pastors, they were still bringing Korbanos and Giva, and only at the end of that did they bring up all the Kalim and the Oren and all that. So the Tiferes Yisrael, for example, wonders about that. There is, in fact, in Seder Olam, which is a historical medrash written by Rabbi Yossi, but of Kalafta, that goes through Jewish history based on the Psukim, he gives the amount of time the Mishkan was in Noven given as 50 years rather as 63 years rather, 13 in Noven, 50 in Gilgal, and the Vilna Gaon explains in his notes on Seder Olam that would be including the amount of time it took to build the Beis HaMikdash, because up until that time, then yeah, they were still using the Mishkan in Gilgal. So now that we've established all those figures, and as we said, Nishtaira L'Shiloh, Shlosh Meres V'Shivim, Chosra Achas, it comes out what's left for Shiloh is 370 minus 1 years, 369, because again, we start with 480 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim until 2448, until they started building the first Beis HaMikdash in 2928, now that you've subtracted from it 40 years in the desert, which brings us to 2488, 14 years conquering and dividing brings us to 2502. They set up the Mishkan in Shiloh and it stood for 369, brings us to 2871 when it was destroyed. And then 57 years for Noven Given brings us to 2928. And in that year they started building the first Beis HaMikdash. Next, the Mishnah had said, Bo the Noven Given, Kola, once they came. So we said that when the Mishkan was in Shiloh, then Bomos or Osir. But once they came to Noven Given, then Bomos became Mutter again during those 57 years. Incidentally, in the previous parak and in this one, how throughout most of the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, there was a big problem. There were many Jews bringing korbanos on private bamos, even though it was usher, and of course Yeravam also set up his Egle Hazav, also using that excuse that bamos and mutter. It's very possible, had there not been this long period of time, 57 years, a couple of generations, when bamos were mutter, it's possible if that amount of time had been shorter, then maybe the Jewish people would not have gotten as used to having private bamos, and there wouldn't have been this ongoing problem throughout the first Beis HaMikdash. In other words, maybe the fact is Shiloh was destroyed because of the Averis that were being done over there, especially Eli's sons. It's very hard, but like this, the Gemara is going to bring Psukim implying that there was a break between Shiloh and Yerushalayim in terms of bamos, but it didn't necessarily have to be 57 years. It's possible that if it had been much shorter, then the rest of Jewish history might have looked very different. The Mishnah says, Bo the Noven Given, when they came to Noven Given, then Bamos became Mutter. So it must have been Nohanim Yili. Where do we know that from? The Tanan Abanim, we learn in a Braisa. Moshe says to the Jewish people, Kilei Vosemat Ota, Ela Menucha Vela Nachla. You have not yet come to the Menucha, the resting place, and the Nachla, the inheritance. Now, Moshe is implying, as the Gemara had said earlier, that during that time, when you have not yet come to those places, then you will be allowed to bring Ishkala Yashab Einav, you will be able to bring on Bamos, the Korbanos that are right in a person's eyes, which we had a several way machlokas among Tanoim, which Korbanos exactly could and couldn't be brought. During that time, everybody agrees they could bring voluntary Korbanos. The question is, were there any obligatory Korbanos that could be brought by the Yochad or by the Sibur? Anyway, why the expression Ela Menucha Vela Nachla? So, when it says Elamenucha, means you have not yet come to Shiloh to build the Mishkan there. Nachla is the Yerushalayim, and when it says Ve'elam Nachla, and to the inheritance, refers to Yerushalayim. The Rambam points out, by the way, here the Gemara is going to bring other psukim soon that show that Yerushalayim is called Nachla. The Rambam points out in Yehi Kavod we have three psukim back to back. Kivachar Hashem b'tzion ival l'moshav loy, ki Yaakov b'chol loy, that Hashem has chosen Tzion and desired it as his place of resting. Ki Yaakov b'chol loy ko Yisrael b'skol, also Hashem has chosen Yaakov as his precious nation. And ki lo yitish Hashem es amev v'nachalos lo yazav, and Hashem will not abandon his people and his nachla. So Rambam points out those three psukim back to back tell us that there's a similarity, the same way as Hashem is never going to exchange the Jewish people for any other nation, chas v'shalom, and allow us to disappear, the same way the nachla, the same way Hashem is never going to abandon his nachla of Yerushalayim and the Beis Mikdash, and the Shechina is still there now, which has implications, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, as far as not going in there nowadays, but it also has implications as far as that you can't bring korbanos anywhere else once the Beis Mikdash was established in Yerushalayim. Those three psukim are back to back to teach us that. The Rambam's phrasing actually suggests as though they're back to back psukim in Tillim. The Rashash points out they're not. They're from three different places in Tillim. Nevertheless, maybe the Rambam didn't mean that they were adjacent in Tillim, but that the Chachamim put it adjacent in davening to hint at the Sadiq. So, Lomachilkan, going back to the Braisa, so why we have Elam Menucha and Elam Nasla, why does the Torah mention them separately, a divide between them? But it is in Heter, Menzelazet, to imply that there's a Heter between one and the other, to imply exactly that. They have, there's going to be a period after the Menucha, after Shiloh, and before the Nachla, Yerushalayim, when you will be allowed to have private bombers. So the Gemara says, now, when it came to Shiloh, the Mishnah had told us that Maaser Sheni could be eaten and Kolchim Kalim could be eaten anywhere within sight of Shiloh. The Gemara earlier on, for the past some days, had brought several psukim to hint to that idea that you could eat Kolchim Kalim and Maaser Sheni not only in the city of Shiloh itself, but in any of the areas surrounding it as long as you could see the Mishkan from there. But now, when it comes to Noiv and Given, the Mishnah does not say anything about Maaser Sheni. So, Amalei Rishlokish Lev Yechanon, why indeed, when it comes to Noiv and Given, does the Mishnah not say anything about Maaser Sheni? Now, when we learn back in the Mishnah, when we look back in the Mishnah, we have different gusos over there about what exactly is mentioned, what exactly is and isn't mentioned where, in connection with Shiloh, in connection with Noiv and Given. And Tosfos has a long discussion over here about exactly what the correct gusa should be and where exactly at that point Maaser Sheni could be. But the question is, why doesn't the Mishnah say that Maaser Sheni they had to bring to Noiv and Given? One possible is that it doesn't say in the Mishnah at all what they did with Maaser Sheni at that point. Another is that there's actually a gusa. Rashi over here had a gusa in the Mishnah that it says that Maaser Sheni could be eaten in any Jewish city, in any city all over Eretz Yisrael. And the question is why? Why do they not have to bring it to Noiv and Given? On the way, Rabbi Yechon answers in Maaser Shom Shom Me'orin Koyalch. Because where do we learn that Maaser Sheni has to be brought to Yerushalayim? We learn it from a Zedah Shava, from the word Shom that it says in connection with the Orin. Ba'achalt and Shom, the Pasuk says you should eat the Maaser Sheni and other such things there. And you have Lashak and Shmosh and Menasata Shom as the Oren, and the Pasuk says that you should place it there into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you should place the Oren. So you have a Gzeir Shavah on that, from which we learn. So only when the Oren is there do you have to, with the Mishkan, do you have to eat Maaser Sheni? Given the Oren Noihavi, well, in Noiv and Given, the Oren was not there, because first it was in Kiryas the Oren, and then in Yerushalayim, Maaser Nami, Loihavi, then therefore Maaser Sheni did not have to be eaten there either, and therefore you could in fact eat it anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. So the Shlok says, you have to Pesach the Kodshim Nami, well then shouldn't the same din apply to the Kodim Pesach and to other kochim, the Shom Shom Me'oren Yalfi, because we learn the same Zeta Shabbat in connection with them. And yet, And we should say, Kivin de Oren lo yhava, inu nam lo yhavu. And we should say, if there was no Oren and no even Givon, then those Chodshim didn't have to be brought there either. And the fact is, we were saying, everybody agreed that in Gilgal and in no even Givon, Pesach, at the Korban Pesach, and certain Chodshim were being brought there. There was my focus, whether Chatoris and Ashomis can be brought there, and certain other kinds of Korbanis. But everybody agreed that the Pesach and Chodshim and Chodvash Shikavu Lahenzman, obligatory korbanos that have a fixed time, such as the korbanos tmidin and musafin, were in fact being brought in noven givin. Well, based on that, zera shava one. Omalei, so Rav Yochanan says to Rish Lakish, okay, you have a point, but you should know the omala homani. If you know what, who is telling you that? Who do you think is Tana, who's implying that maisasheni during the time of noven givin could be eaten anywhere? That actually says the whole Ora Yisrael, that it actually says it could be eaten in any Jewish city. You should know Rav Shimon. That would be specifically according to Rav Shimon. As the earlier Gemara had talked about, Rav Shimon says that during the time of Gilgal and later on Noven Gibbon, even the Sibur could not bring all the Korbanos Sibur, only the Korban Pesach and other obligatory korbanos that have a fixed time, so the korbanos tmidin and musafin. Reb Shimon holds that obligatory korbanos that do not have a fixed time were not brought anywhere during that time, not on a private vama and not even on the public vama, not even in the Mishkan. So, in other words, as we said, for example, according to him, the parhelim davashal tzibur, for example, would not have been brought during those years if there had been a need for one. And similarly, other korbanos that have to be brought, but where there's no fixed time for that. Tosfos points out that there are other opinions like that who agree with that. Rav Shimon is the one who says the specific drasha that the Gemara is going to bring now, and therefore the Gemara mentions Rav Shimon's opinion, but in fact there are other chachamim who might agree with him as well. Anyway, the point is, says Rav Yochanan, well, according to that opinion, then you can understand why Maisa Sheni does not have to be brought to Noiven Givon. Maisa Behema Chloibus Shein Kavola Hensmanhu, because Maisa Behema, by definition, is something that's obligatory, but there's no fixed time. Whenever you take Maisa Behema, is when you have to bring the animal to be brought as a korban. The Itkash Maisa Dragon, Maisa Behema. So therefore, according to Rav Shimon, then those would not have been brought during the period of Noiven Givon, because they're obligatory korbanos, but they don't have a fixed time. And according to him, only voluntary korbanos and obligatory korbanos that are fixed in time were brought during that time. Well, Maisa Behema Chovas Shein Kavur Lahem Zmanahu. So Maisa Behema, by definition, is something that's obligatory but not doesn't have a fixed time. The Itkash Maisa Dragon, the Maisa Behema. And now you should know that there's a hekesh between Maisa of grain and Maisa of animals, that what applies to one applies to the other, and therefore, if there was a period during Noven Givon, when appointed of Shimon, you're not bringing Maisa Behema as a korban. And according to him, you're not bringing it during that period. You're also not bringing mice or grain or any other produce. And that would explain why the Mishnah is saying that you could eat it, why the Mishnah is saying or implying that you could eat it anyway. So the Gemara says, the cloud of Yehuda caught it. So are you implying that of Yehuda, who disagrees with Rav Shimon and says, that Maisa Behema would have been brought, because according to him, he says that any obligatory korbanos had to be brought during that time, but they would be that you couldn't bring them on a private bama, you would have to bring them to Gilgal or to Noiv or Givon. So are you telling me that according to Rav Yehuda, Maisa Sheni would have to also be brought to Noiv and Givon during that period, because of the same hekesh? And the Gemara says, Rav Yehuda would say that Maisa Sheni and Maisa Behema had to be eaten specifically in Noiv and Givon. So yeah, each of them, Rav Shimon, and Rav Yehuda is being consistent with his opinion as far as which obligatory korbanos are or aren't being brought during that period. So the Gemara says, V'haboy bira, but don't you need, in order to have to be, eat Maisa Sheni, there has to be a bira. Earlier in the Masechta, we talked about the word bira means either a specific building in the Beis Hamikdash or the Beis Hamikdash complex in general, but the point is, in other words, it means a place where Hashem's presence is. Also says, Lifnei Hashem Alekecha, is not even given, in fact, considered that. The Gemara is assuming maybe not, because the Oren wasn't there. And the answer is, yeah, the law of Tani Rav Yosef, didn't Rav Yosef teach a Braisa? Sholosh Biros, there were three Biros, three places that can be called where Hashem's presence rested. Shiloh, the Nova Givon, or Veselamim. So Shiloh, where the Mishkan was in Shiloh, Nova Givon, which again count together for all for the reasons that we've been saying so far, and Veselamim, the permanent house, the Beis Hamikdash. So we say, yeah, each of them is called a Bira. And who Tony Lord of Yosef taught this Braisa, who Amala. And he explained what the Braisa means. He means this Braisa that he quoted means, insofar as Maisa Sheni is concerned, then they're all considered the Bira, they're all considered the place of Hashem's Shechina, even though in some of them the Oren was not present, and that's following the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore, so it doesn't matter whether the Oren is there or not, as long as it is considered a Bira, then it is a place for Maisa Sheni. So it comes out in short, there's Machlokes. Rabbi Shimon would hold that doing that, and an Oren Mishnah follows him, that during the period of Noiv and Givon, you don't have Maisa Sheni. Maisa Sheni does not have to be brought to Noiv and Givon. You can eat it anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. We said when we learned the Mishnah, we didn't talk about that as far as Gilgal, because in Gilgal they hadn't yet started having to do Maisa Sheni. That was that the Chiyuvim of most mitzvahs, Aphorius Ba'aretz, including Maisa Sheni, kicked in only when they finished the conquest and division, and that was the point when they set up the Mishkan and Shiloh. So that was the first time that those mitzvahs applied. They continued to apply during the Noiv and Givon period, but according to Reb Shimon, during those 57 years, they didn't have to bring Maisa Sheni or to Noiv or to Givon, because Maisa Behema they couldn't bring, whereas according to the Yehuda, they had to bring Maisa Behema there, and therefore they also had to bring Maisa of produce there. Okay. Next, the Mishnah had said, Bo Yerushalayim, Beholah, when they came to Yerushalayim, then they set up, they built the Beis Hamikdash, and from then on, Bamos are never mutar again. So again, we said before that Menucha and Nachla were focused specifically to Shiloh and Yerushalayim. So now the Gemara brings different opinions on that. Turn around, Bamos. When the Pasuk is saying that you have not yet come to the Menucha, to the resting place of Ela Nachla, and to the inheritance. Again, as we said before, Menucha is Yerushalayim, Nachla is Yerushalayim, the word Menucha refers to Shiloh, the word Nachla refers to Yerushalayim. As we said before, therefore the Pasuk splits them up and puts the word Ve'el between them to tell us that there was a period between them when Bamos were mortar. Ve'omer, and we have other Pasukim also, but we see Yerushalayim is called a Nachla. The Navi, Yirmiya, complains in Hashem's name about in his times where people in Yerushalayim were corrupt and doing different Averas. He says, Hoysel di Nachlosi ka'aryeh bayar. My Nachla, Yerushalayim, my precious Yerushalayim, has become to me like a lion in the forest. Meaning, in other words, like a lion that you don't want it anywhere near you. You want to hunt it. You want to get rid of it. You have the noise from it. The roar of it is very loud. In the same way, Hashem is complaining about what's going on in Yerushalayim that I can't stand it anymore. But we see that Hashem still calls it Nachalos, my inheritance. And Ba'omer, and Yirmiya continues in the next passage. Ha'ayat Shavu Nachalosi Li is my inheritance. Again, Yerushalayim, is it like a colorful ayat? An ayat is a bird of prey, like a hawk or an eagle or something like that. Ha'ayat Shavu Aleha, that the birds of prey are gathering around. Ha'ayat Shavu Nachalosi Li, is it like to me a colorful, blood-drenched bird? Ha'ayat Shavu Aleha, with the birds of prey surrounding it all around. In other words, he's complaining that Yerushalayim is blood-stained with Ritzicha and other Averis that's going on over there, and the Goyim are surrounding it and getting ready to capture it. Why should it have to be that way, Hashem is saying? So we see that in all those Pesukim, Nachla refers to Yerushalayim. Divrei Rabbi Yehuda, that's what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Shimon reverses the definitions. Menucha zu Yerushalayim, Nachla zu Shimon. The word Menucha in the Pasuk refers to Yerushalayim, the word Nachla refers to the temporary place in Shimon. Ba'omer, as we find, the pasuk where Yerushalayim is called Menucha. Hashem says, Zois Menuchasi Adead, this will be my resting place, referring to Yerushalayim, forever and ever. Hoy Eshev, I will dwell here, Ki Yivisiha, because I desire it. Ba'omer, and we have another pasuk, Ki Vachar Hashem B'tzion, and Hashem has chosen Tzion, Ivach L'moshav Loi, he desired it as the place for his dwelling. So we see that the word, and that's right before the pasuk. So therefore, so we see that Menuchasi clearly refers to Yerushalayim, to Tzion, as it says in the previous pasuk. So therefore, so Rabbi Shimon is saying that the definitions have to be reversed. Menucha refers to Yerushalayim, where Hashem's Shina rests permanently. Nachla, an inheritance, refers to Shiloh on a temporary basis. So the Gemara says, "Bishleim l'mad d'amar menucha zu shiloi." So I understand according to Reb Shimon's opinion that menucha refers to shiloi, and the ktiv ala menucha v'ala nachal. So that explains. The other way around. According to Reb Yehuda's opinion, who says that menucha in the pasuk in Parshas Re'e refers to shiloi, and the nachal refers to Yerushalayim, then we understand the flow of the pasuk, and the ktiv ala menucha v'ala nachal. You have not yet come to the menucha, nor have you yet come to the nachal. So therefore, it's going in chronological order. But if you say that Menucha refers to Yerushalayim, Nachla is Shiloh, and that Nachla is Shiloh, Reb Shimon's opinion, then our Nachla v'al Menucha mevayolah, then should say the other way around. You haven't come to the Nachla or to the Menucha. And the answer is Chochi Chabra. According to Reb Shimon, the Torah is speaking in one of those needless to say things. When you come first into Eretz Yisrael, needless to say, you have not yet reached the permanent place of resting of the Shekhinah in Yerushalayim. You have not even, when you're in Gilgal, you have not yet even arrived at Shiloh, which is a temporary inheritance, and therefore Bomer Samutr during that period. So Loizu, not only this, Afzu, but also this. So therefore, so the pasuk can work out like that as well. Okay? The Gemara continues, Tanid Ve Rabbi Shmuel, we learn in a braisa from the Yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel, Zu Vizu Shiloh, both words, Nach Menucha and Nachla, refer both to Shiloh. Meaning, in other words, it would come out, Rashi says, according to, now, we said before, if we say that one refers to Shiloh and one refers to Yerushalayim, fine, it doesn't matter if Shimon or Rabbi Yehuda's opinion, either way, the pasuk is implying that there was a period of Heter Bomas when Bomas and Mutter in between, fine. But according to Rabbi Shmuel, that both of them refer to the Mishkan in Shiloh, then it would come out there on the face of it. There's nothing in the pasuk that tells us that Bomer Samutr during that period. Nevertheless, that Bomer Sa also afterwards. Nevertheless, Rashi says Bomers are in fact Mutter. After that time, because he holds that the Kedusha of Shiloh was only a temporary one, and for that matter, Rabbi Shmuel holds, as Gemara tells us in Megillah, Rabbi Shmuel holds that even the Kedusha of Yerushalayim is only temporary, and that you would be able to bring Sorbonus on private Bomers after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed. So Rashi says that Bomers were in fact mutter after the time of Shiloh. Tosfos points out, we find in a number of places, we find Shol and Shmuel bringing korbanos outside of Mishkan during that time. There's no question they weren't doing Averis. So therefore, even Rabbi Shmuel has to agree that there was a time after Shiloh when Bomer Sa Mutter, but again, Rashi points out that even that Rabbi Shmuel would hold that even after Yerushalayim was destroyed, you're allowed to bring korbanos on Bomer outside Yerushalayim. Tosfos earlier in the Masechta disagrees with that, and then Tosfos over here just discusses that point, and then earlier in the Masechta they have a long discussion of that point. What does is that so? Does Rabbi Shmuel in fact hold? Is there anybody who holds that you could bring korbanos outside Yerushalayim, outside the Beis Mikdash after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed? The argument, basically, Tosfos explains earlier in the Masechta and in Megillah, the argument is just the opposite. Can you bring korbanos in the place of the Mizbeach in Yerushalayim, where the Mizbeach was after the Beis Mikdash was destroyed? Rabbi Shmuel would say that you could not. But to bring korbanos anywhere else, even Rabbi Shmuel would agree, according to Tosfos, is awesome. So therefore, according to him, both phrases refer to Shiloh, and therefore there's Bomas are in fact Mutter after Shiloh, and again, according to Rashi, maybe after Yerushalayim, or according to Tosfos Fakert, after Yerushalayim, it's not Mutter anywhere, even in the Mishnah. Reb Shimon Yechoyim, Zubazu Yerushalayim, Reb Shimon Yechoyim says that both words, Menucha and Nachla, refer to Yerushalayim. Now, before we said Reb Shimon holds one of them is Shiloh and the other is Yerushalayim, so necessarily we would have to say that there were, as Gemara sometimes does, that there were two different opinions among Reb Shimon's Talmidim, what he held, whether he held that both of them refer to Yerushalayim, or whether he held, like we said before, that one refers to Shiloh and the other Yerushalayim. So the Gemara says, "V'shleim l'manda amu menucha zu Shiloh nachla zu Yerushalayim inami itcha." According to the first two opinions, Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon, then we understand how it is el hamenucha ve'el hanachla. Then we understand why the pasuk says to the menucha and to the nachla. So we can say it means you haven't yet come to the Menorah, nor have you yet come to the Nechvah, or it could be, which is like Rabbi Yehuda, or Rabbi Shimon would say you have not yet come even to the Menorah, let alone to the Nechvah. You haven't come to the Menorah, and needless to say, you haven't come to the Menorah, to the permanent Menorah, but you haven't even come yet to the Nechvah. So therefore, because they're two different places, and therefore of the L for each one then. But if you say both of them refer to Shiloh, or both Yerushalayim, then why is there the L in between? Menucha Nachla Mibarilai, then it should just say that you haven't yet come to the Menucha Nachla. I think Mara says, you're right, Kasha, that would be a Kasha according to those opinions, how they explain the pasuk. The Gemara says, let's look at the definitions, at the meanings of the word. Vishleim Amas Zuvazu Shiloh. I understand according to the opinion that both of them refer to Shiloh. Then why are we calling Menucha? Then why are we calling Shiloh both Menucha and Nachla? We can say Menucha de Nochum Mikibush. It's called Menucha because at that point they rested from conquering Eretz Yisrael, which is two things. In other words, it means they set it up at the end of the 7 years when they conquered and divided, and now they're resting from all of their exertions. Rashi also mentions on the pasuk in Yeshua that one, just the opposite. Once they set up the Mishkan and Shiloh, then it became easier for them to conquer whatever was left, whatever had not been conquered, and therefore, in that sense, they're resting from up until that point. They had to fight hard for various parts of Eretz Yisrael. Now they were able to take it easy, and the goyim are falling into their hands more easily. So therefore, that would be a reason to call Shiloh Menucha. Nachla, and why we'd call it Nachla, Zudu Pargohos and Nachlas, is because that's where they divided up the Nachlas of the Jewish people. So it can be described and say for Yeshua that in particular, by the time they set up the Mishkan and Shiloh, 7 Shvatim had not yet received their territory, 5 Shvatim had. Reuben, Gad, and half Manasseh in Ebrei Yarden had been done by Moshe. Yehuda and Ephraim and the other half of Manasseh had already received their territories in Eretz Yisrael before the Mishkan in Shiloh, before the Mishkan was set up in Shiloh, and then you had 7 more Shvatim, and then that's when they sent out the commissioners and divided everything up. So then the pasuk says, that they divided up the Nachlas to Chiv. The pasuk says, "Vayichalak lahem Yeshua." Yeshua divided them the land. "Vayakal lahem Godol b'Shiloh api Hashem." He threw a Godol for them in Shiloh according to the word of Hashem. That's not the actual words in the pasuk, but it's a paraphrase of the pasuk. So therefore, we can understand why Shiloh can be called Menucha because of that rest from the conquest, and Nachla because they divided up the inheritances. Elo mandomen zuzu Yerushalayim. But if you say both of them refer to Yerushalayim, Mishlem and Nachla, Nachla Selamim. We understand why Yerushalayim would be called Nachla, because it's an eternal inheritance. Because again, the Shekhinah is always there for Nachalos Elayazov. Elo Menucha, my Menucha. But why specifically would it be called Menucha? And the answer is Menuchas Oren. It's where the Oren came to rest after all the years when it had been wandering around. Dichtiv, as we find the word resting used in connection with the Oren, by Hikinoyach Oren. When the Oren rested, so we see that resting is used in connection with the Oren. Rashi says that there's no such pasuk in Tanakh. We had it earlier on Kufyat Ches on the days of the Tach. Also, the Gemara had quoted a pasuk which actually doesn't exist, and Rashi also had explained that the Gemara is referring to a particular pasuk and is paraphrasing it. So Rashi says that there's a pasuk in Divrei Yomim when they're bringing the Oren into the Kodesh HaKadoshim for the first time in the Beis Hamikdash. Shlomo says, "Kuma Hashem Elokim Menuchecha Atav Aron Uzecha." You and your Oren arise and come to your resting place. You and the Oren of your might. So therefore, we see that the word Nuchecha, your rest, is used in connection with the Beis Hamikdash. Tosfos brings a different pasuk we find by Yeshua when the Kohenim's feet rested on the ground, and then the Yarden split. And you also have Uvenucho Yoimar, Yarden by even said, Uvenucho Yoimar. When the Oren rested, then Moshe would say, Shuvah Hashem Rebbe Salfa Yisrael. So we see a number of places where the pasuk uses the word Noyach, or the Shodesh Noch, resting in connection with the Oren. So that justifies using the word Menucha to refer to the Beis Hamikdash. The Gemara says, "Bishleim and Manom is Zuvazu Yerushalayim." According to the opinion of Rabbi Shmuel, that both the opinion of Rabbi Shimon by Yechoi, rather, that both words in the pasuk refer to Yerushalayim, Abel Shiloh have a Shavya Bomis, implying that during the time of Mishkan Shiloh, Bomis were in fact Mutter, not like we've been saying until now, that during that time they were Osir. Then we can understand an episode in Tanakh, Hayinu Dechtiv, then you find by Manoyach and his wife in Sefer Shoftim, which is after Parashas Nasa, you find that Manoyach had offered the Malach food, Then he then Malach tells them to put it on and walk. And the pasuk is Vayikach Manoach as Gedir Izim Besa Mincha. Manoach took the young goat and the Mincha Vayal al Atzul Hashem and he brought it up on the walk as a korban for Hashem. Now this is during the time of the Mishkan and Shiloh. So if you say that Bomas were mutter during that time according to the Shimon Yochai, then we understand what Manoach was doing was correct. But if you say, according to Rabbi Shmuel, that both phrases refer to Shiloh, and that implies Bomas have Asidon, and therefore during the time of Shiloh, Bomas are Osir, and for that matter, that would be also according to the opinions that say that that one phrase refers to Shiloh and the other to Yerushalayim. So all the opinions except Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai on the bottom of the previous Amud are going to say that during Shiloh, Bomas are Osir. My vayikach Manoach. So how can we say that Manoach, who was a tzaddik, took the korban and brought it on a rock when he's outside the Beis Hamikdash, outside the Mishkan? The answer is Horas Shah Hosa. The answer is that was a one time instruction min Hashemayim to do that. The Malach had specifically told him to do that. So therefore, under those circumstances, he's allowed to. Now, again, we don't ask in halacha like malachim, but this is the matter. This is called haras shah. The same way, for example, as a navi is able to tell a person is able to tell us temporarily to override a mitzvah. The same way the malach is able to do this. So you can't prove anything from that about what was mutter during that period. Okay. The Gemara says, "Tana Dvei Rabbi Shmuel Kedav Shem Ben Yochai." Later on, a braisa from the yeshiva of Rabbi Shmuel learned, like Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai's opinion, that both phrases, Menucha and Nachma, refer to Yerushalayim. The Amud Zuba Zuba Yerushalayim, where Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says that both of them refer to Yerushalayim. In other words, Rabbi Shmuel's Talmidim, his base medrash, taught a braisa that held the opposite of what their Rebbe, Rabbi Shmuel, held and went according to Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. The simonach and a simon for you to remember that mashki gavra legavri, the one man Reb Shimon ben Yochai pulled in the men plural, meaning Reb Shimon, who was a yochid, was able to pull in the talmidim of Rabbi Shmuel and contradict the opinion of their rebbe and hold according to him that both opinions, that both phrases refer to Yerushalayim. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos refers over here to an explanation that they said earlier in the Masechta. Earlier in the Masechta, we have a similar phrase, but the other way around. There, the phrase was mashchi gavri legavra. The men in plural pulled the man in the singular, because there we're talking about that it was the other way around. Rabbi Shmuel Talmidim got Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai to agree with their opinion, with their Rebbe's opinion over his own. But Tosfos points out over there, then what kind of a simon is that? If one time he's saying in one way, the men pulled the man, and the other one time he's saying, the man pulled the men, then you don't have a simon. You're not going to remember which one is which. Rather, Tosfos explains that, like this, Reb Shimon ben Yochai is called men because he's referred to together with his father's names, with two names there, Shimon and Yochai, as opposed to Reb Shmuel, like referred to as a man, because he's only mentioned with his father's name. As you know his father's name. His father, Rabbi Shmuel, was Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, but he's not referred to in this context. He's just referred to by his own name, Rabbi Shmuel. Therefore, the simon in both places is consistent. That the men, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, was mentioned together with his father's name, pulled in the man, the Talmidim, of the single name Rabbi Shmuel, and got them to agree with his opinion. And therefore, the simon is in fact consistent in both places. Okay. So we'll stop over here. We'll continue Be'ez Hashem tomorrow. We'll